Ever since we started BoomerTech Radio, Advanced Automotive has been part of our program. But Tim and Cody Morlock are more than just our advertisers. They're our friends, and they are our first choice when we have our personal vehicles serviced. Why? Well, because after your home, your car is probably your second biggest investment, and it's vital that it be safe and dependable. Advanced Automotive has a skilled staff of certified technicians ready to diagnose your vehicle and get it running right. Advanced Automotive is listed on RepairPal.com, a national rating site where customers can leave reviews and even get an estimate on the cost of a repair. Go where the professionals take their vehicles to be serviced. Advanced Automotive in Reading, on the web at AdvancedAutoReading.com. Visit them at 5756 F Westside Road, just off Bonneview. Call them at 530-244-4423. Advanced Automotive. Welcome once again. It is Boomer Tech Radio. I'm Bob Belongi.
And I'm Brenda Belongi.
Analog living in a digital world. Welcome to the program with goodies, gadgets, gizmos, and tech news you could use. Brought to you here in Northern California by Advanced Automotive of Reading, and along with everyone else, they are slowly getting back into business. They were opened after about day four or day five, I think.
They were only out an afternoon and a morning.
Oh, okay. So one of the things about Tim and Cody Morlock down there is that they actually work on a lot of the firefighting equipment, and well, not the big stuff, but the pickups, the vehicles,
yeah.
And you see ambulances down there and response vehicles of various sorts. So they are trusted to work on those vehicles. So I have no problem with taking my Jeep or our Wrangler or our GMC Yukon or even our new little electric, not totally electric, it's a
hybrid.
Sort of, it's a hybrid, yes. They'll work on the part that burns gas, but the rest of it they're going to kind of keep a safe distance from. Those things can pack a lot of voltage. It's a law of physics that the lower the voltage, the higher the current to get the same amount of energy.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Ohm's Law.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to not have wires that are as big around as your leg, you pump the voltage up. That's why transmission lines, and this is a big fire thing, the transmission lines that carry electricity from point A to point B have that voltage pushed up to well over 100,000 volts. And when you get those kind of voltages on a wire, very strange things happen. That's why those insulators are 6 feet long.
Yeah, exactly. There's a reason for that.
And there's a phenomenon in a wildland fire that I know Brenda has had people tell her about, that when you get a lot of smoke under these high-tension wires,
mm-hmm.
literally lightning strikes, which just makes more fires.
Smoke is full of carbon. Carbon's very conductive.
And it's hot.
And, it may or may not be hot. I mean, it can just be smoke in the air. It doesn't have to be right next to the fire.
But if it's hot, it's even worse.
Well, yeah, if it's pretty warm, it just increases its conductivity. So, generally speaking, that's one of the reasons they de-energize the power lines
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
as soon as possible. There are many other reasons.
Not
but
to mention the fact you don't want some poor schlub hitting that thing with his hose. Or
well, yeah, that's those kind of things. So, yeah. Yep.
For those of you who are not in our immediate area and maybe haven't noticed in the news, there was a major wildfire here in Northern California where we live. Most of the people who I know on Facebook or I've communicated with through various means are aware of what we just are still going through. This is not a thing that's just going to go away. We're in the aftermath. And a lot of people are starting to get impatient. When is it going to be over? Well, folks, it's not going to be over for a while.
Nope, it certainly won't be. And, social media is a very useful thing in these kind of cases to keep people informed
mm-hmm.
and ways to stay in touch with friends and family if you have that kind of connectivity and that sort of thing. But it also opens up the doors for the thieves
yeah.
and the con artists and the ne'er-do-wells and the jerks of the world, scumbags, I call
yeah.
them, people who will take advantage of another person being down and out. Maybe they've lost their home. Maybe their home is damaged. Not even that. They're seeking donations.
Yes. So they have a two-pronged attack.
Exactly. So be very sure of who you're doing business with. Do not succumb to unsolicited things or solicitations for donations to help out this fund or that fund. You need to really know that's where your money is going. It's not going to some con artist who's playing on the hearts of people who want to help and want to donate. And the Reading area folks here are extremely generous. Anytime there is something like this that goes on, you know, there are many, many stories of folks' generosity here, and it's just the way the folks in the Reading area are. And so, shame on you, any clowns that are taking advantage of that and not helping out.
I have an unverified story. I only heard it from one source. Apparently, there's a phone scam involved with a very official-sounding voice with appropriate background noises saying, "This is FEMA. We are distributing funds in your area. We just need your bank account information."
Oh, that's a red flag right there.
Yeah, yeah.
FEMA would not do that.
Over the phone.
Just think. Here's one time where it's very good to be healthily skeptical. I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
Exactly.
You know, you really should. And if a deal sounds too good to be true to affect some repairs or help you clean up or something like that, just it probably is too good to be true. So make sure that you're dealing with reputable, licensed, authorized practitioners to help people out. You know, I hate to say this, but if the house is burned, it's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And I can totally understand why people would be impatient and want things to move faster than they do, but the magnitude of this situation here is so big that it's going to take a while for things to happen. So, you know, it just bothers me that social media and such, you know, technology can be used, as we've said many times, for a great deal of good and was used for a great deal of good in this situation. And it also will turn around and get used for
just like
bad things. Yeah.
Similarly, the GoFundMe sites and the donations that help the fire victims. Text X to phone number such and such, or click here, the email. Click here to donate to the fire victims. I guarantee you, 9 times out of 10, that money's going to the Ukraine or somewhere in China or wherever, you know, because these people skim the newspapers looking for these opportunities, and they have the boilerplate script in place ready to jump on the next thing. All they have to do is fill in the blanks, and they will yank on your heartstrings and open your wallet.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Just be very, very careful.
Yeah, yeah. Use discretion.
Everyone wants to help, but make sure what you're doing is bona fide help.
Yeah. And, you know, and I know there are some legitimate organizations that deal during the phone, but I just have to turn them all down. The reason is I have no idea who is on the other end of phone line.
Yep.
And it's very sad, but I'm sorry I have to do this through the old-fashioned means. And same with thing, you get the email, just delete it, you know.
Yep.
Because 9 times out of 10, it's a scam.
And if it doesn't, you get an email that doesn't sound like your friend at any time. I got one from somebody that's like, no, that's not their style, and that doesn't look right. I just deleted it. If it's legitimate, that person would have contacted me directly. And if you really want to help, you know, there's direct ways to help where your dollar goes dollar for dollar of what you donate goes to fire victims or people that need help in the wake of the fires. And or volunteer. That's another great way to actually contribute that doesn't cost anything, just some time. And then you know you're having a direct effect on folks.
So what else can you do to be ready for a next time? Well, a couple of things that you can do. Now, there was a big complaint about people not being aware of what was going on, and the word wasn't getting out fast enough and things like that.
Things were changing so rapidly, yeah, it was hard to keep up.
One of the ways that any of us has the legal right to do is to, so long as you're not using it to break the law, you have the right to listen in to public safety communications. And there's a number of ways to do that. There's apps. I have an app called Scanner on my Apple iPad that I use to listen to public safety type stuff, and the whole idea is that they have a receiver in this area, and they can pick up the signal, and then they put it into an audio stream.
Right.
And you can do that on the app. Well, that's good so long as you're tied to a good data plan
or
a Wi-Fi or whatever.
Your phone has juice.
Yeah,
or your device has juice.
Or the cell tower hasn't been damaged.
Right, exactly.
During the height of this fire, one of the things that we found out is that a lot of the cell towers either lost power or so they went on emergency backup or they received some form of damage. And there were some live reports from the field that we saw on TV, and they sounded terrible. And the reason was there wasn't as much bandwidth as there normally is. Plus, everybody was on their phone.
Mm-hmm.
So the system got overloaded.
Well, and things slow down and or it just doesn't work. You can't make the connection, or the app isn't working because it can't make a connection.
Right, so...
having a separate radio for that is a really good idea. Or that's how you can get around all of that, because it's not tied to any app and reliant on, say, a cell system or what have you.
So you can get a basic public safety scanner for about, actually, the cheapest route you can go is a radio that is actually intended for handheld ham use.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't transmit on it, but you can get one for about $40. Company is called Baofeng, and it's the UA5. I think that's the number on it. Just a second. I have one right here. The UV5R. You can get this thing on Amazon for about $39.
And Baofeng isn't like B-O-W-F-A-N-G. It's B-A-O-F-E-N-G.
It's a little Chinese-made radio.
Chinese-made radio, and it gets really good reviews. It's a very tough little unit, and it's a lot of bang for the buck if something happens to it. For these kinds of radios, only $40.
Yeah. So long as you do not broadcast the signal, and I'm going to ask you to talk about some of the things that you've discovered on our scanner journey.
Oh, yeah. So this is kind of nice because, first of all, it's programmable, which is really nice. These Baofengs fit in your pocket. They're not very big. It's not like scanners of old that were these big, heavy, clunky things, right?
That were really tough to program. The Baofeng, you can actually get a cable. Now, I programmed this one manually. Again, don't hit the transmit key.
Breaking
several federal laws.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, you have to sort of wink, wink, you know, off to the side. But you definitely do not want to hit the transmit key. I suppose there's people that would get these and be like folks with drones that would be idiots and But chances are you...
Most of the listeners of this show aren't of that ilk.
Let's hope not. Or they don't know anybody like that. So so that is a really important element. If you're going to get one of these, then don't be transmitting, but you can certainly listen in. And it can be a radio of some kind is valuable to have in an emergency like this anyway, because there's that's often how information is distributed. So, for instance, there was a local radio station here. A couple of DJs were on quite a bit, and they were giving updates as they knew them, and that was a good way to stay up to date on road closures, evacuation areas, and all kinds of things like that. So whether you have one of these or just a regular AM/FM radio, it can be handy. The problem we had, though, with a regular AM/FM radio around here was that the transmit site for those stations was in the middle of the fire. And they went off the air for a while because there was no power to the site. And then most recently, they found out that while the equipment in the vaults at the transmits, one of the local main transmit sites, is fine. The power, of course, was off, and then there's also some external building damage and cable damage and things like that.
So it's going to take a while to put those back online.
Oh, yeah. It takes a while to fix all of this stuff. So having a couple radio options might be good in cases of emergency, because, like, regular commercial radio, AM/FM, may not be able to be on the air because their transmit site is damaged. But one of these handhelds, the program scanner, you're picking up airwaves from the emergency services folks and whatever.
So for right around $100, you can get a dedicated scanner that'll hold like 1,000 channels. And the good ones, you can actually plug into your laptop and program the channels to, because entering the channels manually, one by one, is kind of a pain.
Tedious. It's quite tedious. That's old school.
Yeah.
You know?
It is old school. So I went...
you can do it, but it takes a while.
I went shopping for scanners and looked around and found a pretty good one. I'm going to grab the manual for this one here, but we've been playing it in the house for a couple of days.
Yeah, this one actually is really compact and was very, very portable. And it wasn't a $100 specialty.
No, this
thing
is
a little more sophisticated
bucks.
Than that. Well, not quite that much. Well, we didn't pay quite that much. Close enough, I guess.
It lists for about $500.
It actually lists for $7.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
But if you look around, you can find it for under $5.
Yeah, but it does, it's quite capable, if you will.
It's called the Uniden Home Patrol 2, and there's some Home Patrol 1s. The neat thing about this bad boy is that once you have turned it on and it loads up, you tell it where you live. You just punch in your zip code, and it has all the frequencies for the whole country already in it. This is the power of high capacity memory, mind you. It looks up all the active frequencies for your area. In fact, it looks up so many that you end up turning a lot of them off because you keep missing the stuff that you want. But it gets the local PD. It gets fire, which is very important. You can hear the aircraft talking to each other. You hear the fire, the people out on the line making requests. And you hear the dispatches. That's the big thing, is being able to hear dispatches. And that's the first place you're going to be able to hear if the fire is moving in a particular direction, if they're having to roll law enforcement to start up an evacuation. So in my mind, even a $100 scanner is possibly going to save you.
Well, if nothing else, even when there's not big fires or some other kind of natural disaster, it's entertaining.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny. There's some stuff on there, and you go, really? And you get a sense of a level of action in town that you're not necessarily plugged into all the time. You'll hear stuff you won't read about in the paper and whatnot. And so some of it can be quite entertaining.
Now, it is not illegal to listen. In some jurisdictions, it is illegal to listen. In California, it is legal to listen so long as you are not using it to break the law, to be an accessory to your breaking the law. That's
and,
the caveat.
What about passing that information on? Now, media, of course, listens to the scanners all the time.
Right. You cannot, they're under the FCC rules, you cannot disclose the contents of an intercepted transmission under FCC rules. Now, that rule gets bent all the daylights. But when you hear a radio person say, we were just listening on a scanner and so-and-so happened, you're not supposed to really do that. But if it's a life and property thing, you know, nobody's going to really care.
Well, there's that, right?
Exactly. Interestingly enough, you know, I talked about don't hit the transmit key. Under the FCC rules, if it is a matter, and you better be sure about this, if it is a matter of life and death, you are allowed to communicate by any method available.
Correct.
So if you have a ham radio or something like that and you call for help on it, your life had best be in danger. Or the life of someone else had best be in danger, but legally you are exempted under that very specific circumstance. So Again, the scanner, I got it.
Of course, rules and regulations are the first things that come to your mind when there's the emergency.
Right, right. The scanner, again, is the unit in home patrol. Very easy to use. We've been listening to it for actually pretty good sound out of something. It's about the size of it's palm size. It's like a really fat cell phone in its overall size. It works a lot better if you connect an outside antenna to it. It uses a set of rechargeable AA NIM cells, nickel metal hydride, and it'll chew those up in about 6 or 7 hours because it has an always-on LED display. Or actually, it's an LCD with a backlight because it's a color display. But each time it stops to, most old-style scanners, all you got was either a frequency readout or a number, and you had no idea what the channel was. The readout on this says what the organization is, what branch it is, and the frequency along with a unit identifier.
Nice.
That's also a trunking radio, which means that certain organizations that use the special digital type systems, what are called trunk radio systems, it will translate those, at least the most popular ones. Now, certain frequencies are, of course, when they're doing law enforcement, are encrypted for security. If the officers are doing some kind of operation that could get officers hurt, well, they're not going to be broadcasting all that in the clear. Most of the time, though, there's an awful lot of really fascinating stuff. And there's a world of resources now so that you can find out what all the 10 codes mean and the the legal codes that they have their own shorthand language.
Right. That's should be readily available online.
It's all available online, yeah.
It's a time-honored stuff that's been used for a long time. Sometimes you hear it in movies and TV shows and things like that, too.
Yeah.
Parts of it anyway, of course.
But you do have the legal right to listen in. Again, so long as you're not breaking the law, by using that information. So, interesting thing. And we have certainly been listening because of where we live. We have been listening fairly closely to the scanner. And when they do tone outs, like for the fire department, for Cal Fire.
Yeah, you'll hear those tones.
They run tones. And if you suddenly hear what sounds like a circus calliope gone mad, you want to pay attention.
A lot of resources being called out.
Each of the units has usually old-style pagers that are tuned to respond when it hears the tones. Those pagers always listening.
Particular
and
codes,
when a particular coded tones come through, the pager turns on.
Yep.
And so that's so that the poor pagers, guy doesn't have to listen to everything.
Pagers didn't last long.
Yeah, well, digital one, yeah.
they were around for a few years, but they...
Yeah, but tone pagers are still a thing, especially among law enforcement.
Yep.
Or, excuse me, among fire personnel.
Yep, that makes sense.
That's existing technology, but you will hear, and that's how they dispatch specific units to a specific incident is by punching in these codes. So it's real fascinating stuff. Again, if you just want to dip your toe in the water, you can do it for anywhere between $40 to $100. If you want to get really into it, the sky is the limit on that. For my purposes, and your mileage may vary, but the unit in Home Patrol 2 worked out really nice for us.
Yep.
We're going to be taking it on the road because you can take that. That's a neat thing, too, is if you go to a different area, all you do is punch in the zip code.
Right, and it'll automatically adjust to the local frequencies.
Yeah. So
they probably collect that data on you from the point of view that look at who is which zip codes are being tapped into when. Do you have to register?
This doesn't go online. No, and you don't have to register it. Now, they're soft. It'll run right out of the box, but if you want to update the frequency lists, you can. If you just want to update the frequency list, you can connect the scanner to the computer and update the database. But it does what's called Radio Reference Database, which is a nationwide publicly accessible database.
Okay. Just wondering.
Boomer Tech Radio, I'm Bob. She's Brenda. We will be back.
Lisa Carl and Linda Bott. Join us Monday through Friday from 7 to 9 a.m. for Free Fire Radio, right here in the studios at KCNR 1460. On the week of 13 August, we are joined by Shasta Community College, Doug Wright, attorney at law. What do you need to know about what's happened legally? Sheriff Tom Basinko with an update of what happened with the car fire. Judy Maxwell of Maxwell Insurance, information on what you should be looking for in your insurance policies. And Dr. Kara Tennant, who will address the fire and impact on your pets. All of this next week, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460. Miss a day, miss a lot.
It's a given that your car or light truck is going to need service sooner or later. And often, waiting until later means a lot bigger repair bill. Now, there are many repair shops in town, so it pays to do your research and find out where your friends and neighbors take their vehicles and check reviews online as well. Advanced Automotive of Reading is listed on RepairPal.com, where customers just like you talk about their experience. Advanced Auto has been making quality auto care easy since 1993 and has a philosophy of keeping things simple. Stop by their shop at 5756 F West Side Road, just off Bonneview. You'll see vehicles from local businesses and first responders in the yard because those customers rely on cars and trucks that are safe and reliable. But more than that, safe vehicles mean a safer community. And honestly, it's the right way to do business. Check them out for yourself. Advanced Automotive, 5756 F West Side Road in Reading, 244-4423. You know, this time of year in Shasta County, the need to heat your home is probably the last thing on your mind, right? Well, my friend SSD Oil says this is the ideal time to trade in your old monitor heater on a spanking new Toyotomi and save yourself up to $250. Your qualifying model monitor heater earns you a huge allowance on a Toya stove that will keep you warm and cozy all winter long. This deal is as hot as a Reading sidewalk in summer. SSD Oil, 241-1167, 241-1167. Fresh air and new lasting friendships are hard to come by these days. Bikers Against Child Abuse will be escaping the valley for a weekend to ride through the forests near Shasta Lake, and you're invited. Every child deserves a great childhood, and by coming together, we can help prevent and end child abuse. Enjoy a weekend of fun by joining Bikers Against Child Abuse September 7th through the 9th at Lakeshore Inn and RV. The Shasta County Summer Campout will include overnight camping with cabins, a live band, and the scenic Shasta County ride, complete with a barbecue dinner. Festivities begin Friday with a meet and greet on Saturday. Enjoy a ride, meet up at 9:30, kickstands up at 10, arrive back around 2, and then let the party begin. You won't want to miss the Bikers Against Child Abuse 3-day campout the weekend of September 8th. For more information, contact Bikers Against Child Abuse or call Terminator at 209-9473. Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Joe Heslin for Carmona's Appliance Center.
As your local Whirlpool, KitchenAid, Maytag, Amana, and Janair dealer, we have a full-service department. Whether you need a simple part or you're not sure what the problem is, we have the staff to advise you and locate the proper item. Shop where the contractors shop, with the backing of a complete service department to take care of installation and warranty needs.
Carmona's Appliance Center, your locally owned Brand Source dealer. Mistletoe Lane, Reading. Like us on Facebook and log on at carmonasappliances.com.
It might be the car or light truck that gets you to your job every day. Maybe your child drives it to school. Or perhaps your drivers deliver goods to the customers who keep your business going. The bottom line is, you rely heavily on that vehicle to be safe and reliable day after day, and that means regular maintenance by professionals trained in the latest automotive repair techniques. For Brenda and myself, that means Advanced Automotive is the only repair shop we trust with our personal vehicles. Advanced Automotive does everything they can to make car care easy. Founded in 1993 by Tim Morlock and now owned by his son Cody, carrying on a tradition of honest work at a fair price. Find out for yourself by visiting AdvancedAutoReading.com or go to RepairPal.com, or you could just call 530-244-4423. It's a great little repair shop that's a bit hard to find, but worth the effort. At 5756 F West Side Road in Reading, Advanced Automotive.
Welcome back to Boomer Tech Radio. I am Bob Belongi, and here with me on the Skype line is my son, Alan Belongi, and he's going to bring us some stories. Alan, how you doing?
Doing pretty well. How are you today?
Not bad. The local greeting here in town is, how's your house?
Are you still standing?
Yeah. Is your house still there? We've obviously, where we live here in Redding, California, has had a rather rough week. We made the national news, and not necessarily in a good way, and everybody is recovering. I imagine that the place where you work, which I'm not going to mention, but the place where you work, which sells a lot of building materials, is a little busy right now.
Well, not right now. It's pretty unbusy, but we're planning on being busy, pretty darn busy, for the next couple of years. You know, 1,200 structures go up, and they all need to be rebuilt.
Wow. All right, so let's get right into the stories. Unfortunately, you still, well, or fortunately, you still need people to build houses. Who knows how much longer that's going on, but a lot of these jobs that are very repetitive, that don't require a particular amount of skill or thought, are being turned over to the robots, and it looks like investment in that is going up, right?
Yeah. So a Japanese multinational SoftBank Group, which is a fairly well-known investment group over there, is actually looking into investing close to $1 billion into a startup down in the Bay Area that makes pizza. It uses robots to make pizza, and their whole goal is to automate and get pizza delivery faster and better. And this company actually has, like, ovens in its trucks that it drives around.
Okay.
Pizza actually, like, finishes cooking while it's on its way to you after being made by a robot.
Okay, so you, because one of the things with a delivered pizza that's, you know, you're like the 10th stop on the guy's route, it's a little soggy by the time it gets to you and on the verge of being ice cold.
It definitely can be. A lot of companies have done a lot of different ways to help alleviate that with, you know, warmers or better boxes or whatever. But, yeah, actually having the pizza finish cooking a couple of minutes, which uses a whole bunch of technology to estimate how long it's going to take to do all their different kind of stops and traffic and whatnot, and it does its best to cook it just slow enough to where it finishes right before it actually gets to your house.
Fresh from the oven pizza, delivered to your door. How about that?
And the company itself, amazingly, it only has one physical location and three trucks. So it's not exactly a huge company, but the idea of all the different things that it's doing, it definitely seems valuable enough to enough people that, you know, an investment firm's willing to spend close to $1 billion on them.
Interesting, the company name Zoom, which of course sounds like, you know, Zoom Zoom, but it's spelled Z-U-M-E, not unlike the defunct Microsoft music player. Let's hope it's
the Zoom.
Let's hope that the Zoom is more successful than the Zoom. And robotically prepared food appears to be the future. Now, it was a story about a year ago when the Flippy robot first got started down in the city by the bay. Now it looks like Flippy is going to another venue.
Yeah, Flippy, the hamburger flipping robot, which, you know, it's just a funny name for just a robotic arm that just keeps an eye on patties as they grill and flips them when necessary, is going to be set up at the Dodger Stadium to help take care of, you know, hamburgers cooking all day, well, not all during the game, which is kind of an interesting place for it to go to. You know, it's not exactly going to be working 24/7 there, but fairly regularly. I would figure the whole point of having a burger flipping robot is that, you know, it works pretty much any time of day, not a couple of hours, you know, half of the days of the year during the season.
Well, it doesn't take smoke breaks, doesn't require workman's comp, you don't have to pay insurance, you don't need a parking space for the employee.
Do you need a battery for them, though?
You do need batteries for them, and of course somebody has to load the hoppers and fix it when it gets gummed up. So, but
this... right, and as a reminder, the robot's not exactly all that like great. It doesn't load the grill. Last I checked, it doesn't load the grill. It doesn't like prepare the rest of the hamburger. It just sits there and keeps an eye on the patties. And flips them when appropriate, and then lets you know when they're done.
Okay, so this isn't quite like the storefront in San Francisco to where your burger is made start to finish without human hands on it then.
Right, it's not quite the same thing.
Hmm.
That, I don't remember the name of that, but I've heard of that. That sounds awesome. You go into a store, you give it like 2 a.m., you know, it's, lights are all on, you swipe your card. 5 minutes later, a hamburger pops out of the little tray right there, and you take it and have a, like, you know, restaurant-quality hamburger and not just, well, McDonald's burger, you know, pretty cheap and easy.
Yep. Now, I don't make it a habit to frequent fast food places. Well, I do. I hit drive-ins time to time, but I haven't been in a fast food lobby for a while. But I was in a McDonald's recently, and here are two great big kiosks where instead of going up to the line and trying to get the kid to understand your order three times running, and they still get it wrong, there's a kiosk where you put in your card, you enter your order, and a few minutes later they call it out. So the whole idea here is that employees are expensive. If they get hurt on the job, they can sue. If they stay around long enough, you have to give them increases in their wages. You have to pay for workman's comp. You got to have insurance on them, all kinds of stuff. So corporations that have hundreds and thousands of employees are pretty intrigued by the idea of being able to cut their workforce by a major amount. And, of course, the fact that the state of California pumped in a $15 an hour minimum wage as a goal, the living wage, the companies are responding by saying, okay, we won't hire anybody.
Right, because, you know, the employee actually has to make you twice or more than twice what you're paying them for it to be worth having them around at all. So if they're not worth, you know, more than $30 an hour to you, it's not worth having them. So if it's not worth having them, they just won't.
Well, considering the last few times I've gone through a drive-through and looked in the bag and realized that they got it all wrong, I'm wondering if they're even worth half of what they're being paid. Anyway, enough of that. There's an old joke about a NASA scientist telling a guy, yes, we're flying to the sun, and the guy says, well, won't you get burned up? And the scientist says, no, because we're going to go at night.
Yeah, that makes sense. Sure. Yeah.
So, but NASA is, in fact, wanting to go boldly into the Big Sol orb.
NASA's Parker Solar Probe is launching on August 11th. It's sending it off to the sun with the intent to touch it to make it go into the sun's atmosphere.
So it's going to pass through the corona.
Yeah. It seems unlikely that basically impossible that the probe is actually going to survive this mission, but they're hoping that it's able to send back some information before it turns into a giant fireball.
Yeah.
Getting there is actually more difficult than you would kind of think it would. It takes about 55 times more effort to get to the sun than it would to Mars.
Really?
Because the Earth is always moving away from the sun, right? You know,
right,
centrifugal
right.
force
yeah,
and all that.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
always moving away from the sun. So you have to completely counteract Earth's orbit around the sun and then go towards it in order to actually make any headway. And in the going to Mars, you can pretty much use the momentum you get from coming off of the Earth to head to Mars, you know, when our orbits align.
Right, right, right.
So, yeah, it takes a lot of effort to get to the sun. But they're going to put the effort into it. And there's this funny video that NASA actually put up. It's entitled, "It's Surprisingly Hard to Go to the Sun." And pretty much anybody that thinks of it like, no, it's not really all that surprising. It's pretty hard, I think, to get to the sun and especially survive the journey.
Hmm. What do they hope to discover on this mission?
mostly just exactly how hot it is. If there's any like different information they can glean from, you know, particles coming up off of it, basically anything else that we can't necessarily know just from visual observation and what radiation makes it here. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a big difference between what looks like there and actually, you know, getting samples and sending back specific information of what's nearby.
Interestingly enough, a year ago, of course, I went up to Oregon to witness the total eclipse, and during that totality, you actually see that the corona sticks way out, almost well over the diameter of the sun, outward on all sides. It's an incredible sight. Normally, you cannot, because of the contrast, you cannot see the corona, but it's an inspiring sight when you see that black hole in the sky with the corona all around it. They don't have to, if I recall correctly, the corona is well over a million degrees or something like that.
It's pretty warm.
Yeah, nothing that ordinary materials are going to be able to handle, so... Interesting. Well,
they're not assuming it's going to actually survive, but they're hoping it lives long enough to send back some information.
Well, and imagine that, because the sun, of course, is a gigantic source of radio energy. So you've got a whisper in the midst of you've got a mouse whispering in the midst of an orchestra.
Yeah, it's not a huge chance of success, and well, it's actually a pretty damn small chance of success, but they figure they'll be learning a lot from doing this in the first place, you know, for any future attempts they might use to try to get information out from what the sun might contain.
Even a failure contains discovery. Yes.
And speaking about the eclipse, it just is interesting how the moon just happens to be just the right size for that, you know?
Right. Well, I have marveled on that. Now, we've had, and more common, the annular eclipse that took place here some years ago, where you end up with a big ring. But there's nothing like actual totality to just completely blow your mind.
Right.
The next one, I think, is 2025 in Mexico.
In this area, yeah.
Yeah, it was that comes through the United States. And Texas is going to be a good place to watch it. And that's supposed to have a four-minute totality. The one that I witnessed, Brenda and I witnessed up in Oregon, lasted just under 2 minutes. But that time, which went by incredibly fast, you can look at the pictures, you can see the videos, you can hear descriptions, but until you stand there with your mouth hanging open, You can understand why this just freaked ancient people out completely, because even with the knowledge of what it really is, it's just wrong. The little reptile part of your brain just goes, that ain't right.
This isn't good. This something's bad's happening right now.
But we will be able to recreate these events in various formats, including augmented reality. And we talked some time ago about an augmented reality system that is used to assist disabled people getting around. Now we're talking about indoors navigation, and I assume that this is for people who have some sort of visual impairment or what?
Not necessarily. It's kind of like GPS when moving around like an airport or a giant mall or something like that.
Okay.
It's called the Blipar. The company's named Blipar. It's intended to be integrated into like Google Glass or even just into your phone and just hold it in front of you. And it actually tracks like visual landmarks for it, so it runs. It doesn't have to be connected to the internet for it to work. It doesn't use telemetry or anything like that. It just recognizes, okay, that sign's there, that wall's there, okay. And then it is able to create paths for you to get where you need to go for whatever you tell it to direct you to.
So I see a bunch of people going around the airports holding up their phone like it's a mass play of Pokemon Go.
Pretty much, yeah. except it seems likely that if this ever takes off, you're not going to see little Pokemon critters, but you're probably going to see ads pop up here and there.
Oh, yeah,
all sorts
yeah,
of
yeah.
Things.
Are you hungry? We hear your stomach growling right over here to Joe.
Like, hey, yeah, right. There's a big old arrow right there, like, right over there. It's the food court. Yeah, I know where the food court is. Thank you.
And, of course, if the phone is harvesting your data, we see you have a propensity for pizza. The pizza's right this way.
Yeah. Like, fortunately, this does have the offline mode, so... You know, it still can collect your and harvest your data even when you're offline, but it's a little bit better when it's not, you know.
Yeah.
But.
Well, that's a big thing, of course, is data harvesting. There are efforts, of course, the European Union is putting out a big effort to keep your data private. And there's this whole thing with the Facebook backlash and backlash against Google that, hey, you keep saying I have to sign away all my rights just to use your service. I'm not so sure I want to do that anymore. Now, what that means is that some of these services may no longer be quote-unquote free because there is an inherent cost in the infrastructure, in the power bills, and all that. So we're going to have to find that balance between, quote, free and giving up personal information that can be monetized and marketed and in some cases used against us. So I do see a cheaper version of the Google Glass, maybe something almost like 3D goggles that are disposed, or the 3D glasses that are actually active, but after you're done with them, you just toss them in the bin like you do down at the movie theater.
Yeah, and then they, put them through the big old blue light filter and then get them out again.
Kill all the life forms on them.
The weird ear goo you've left on there.
Oh, don't remind me. Now, it's interesting. India has, of course, and anybody who has had any dealings with tech knows all about making friends in India because it's sort of like the, I'm not sure if it holds that crowning, it was the tech support capital of the planet, which is interesting because during the day here, it's middle of the night over there, so there's an awful lot of people living in reverse diurnal patterns. But
it's cheaper, so.
Yeah, you know. But they do have a major... IT industry over there, and they're, of course they're trying to promote their own stuff. So regulators are turning their eyes to the iPhone, is that right?
It's actually related to, you know how bad telemarketing is around here?
Yeah.
It's apparently, like, a lot worse over there.
I'm not sure how that's possible.
People getting phone calls and spam messages all the time. To the point where the government actually, like, came up with apps that you could use to report numbers and things that you get from spam callers, and they make it pretty much mandatory to service carriers to allow these apps to be used on anybody that wants them's phones. However, since the apps made harvests data in a way that goes against Apple's privacy policy. Apple says, as is, no, we can't let this app work on our iPhone, and they rejected it. So the government regulation industry that made the app actually gave Apple 6 months to either allow it or iPhones weren't going to be allowed on the wireless network, the cellular network over there in India.
Considering how big the Indian market is, that would be a major blow to sales.
There's like a billion people over there, quite literally.
Yeah.
So Apple is doing its best to be like, so how about we make a version that's very similar to what you want, and it reports to you. And the regulatory agency was like, no. You need to allow this app, or we're gonna move ahead with our plans to ban iPhones from the network.
Gosh, you don't suppose Samsung has any interest in this, do you?
No,
couldn't happen. No bribery took place. article I recently read, and I believe this was in PC Magazine, essentially stated that the days of the mechanical hard drive are numbered.
And, it should be.
For years now, we have dreaded bumping the computer for fear that it would crash that little spinning hard drive, which is rotating somewhere between 5,400 and 7,200 revolutions a minute, and has a head floating on a cushion of air that is literally just microns thick, and a good bump.
It's basically a fairly advanced record player.
Yeah, yeah. But the tolerances are so tight, and of course, you've got a motor spinning a platter, which has inertia. Seeker head has a motor that draws power, so the spinning hard drive eats a laptop's battery. Now, solid-state drives, which are basically big, big chunks of random access memory that has persistence stuffed all into a case, have been out for some years, but they've been monstrously expensive. But just as was the case with RAM memory, which is the working memory of your computer, and hard drives themselves, the cost per gigabyte or cost per megabyte has been dropping dramatically. And now very large solid-state drives are coming to market, and this is going to be a complete game-changer because now you've got a portable device that has huge capacity, eats a lot less power, and is a lot more shockproof, right?
Yeah, they have the ones you're talking about. It's they make 32 terabytes giant sticks that you can plug together for servers, which is pretty impressive. They can work together to actually make essentially a terabyte hard or a petabyte hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
That is obviously intended for servers since, well, you don't really need a petabyte.
Yeah.
A petabyte would be 1,000 terabytes.
Yeah.
And that would be an awful lot of movies.
Yeah. Now, I've got devices that use the standard SD card, which when they first came out were a gig. And then more recently, 32 gigs, 64 gigs. Now, mind you, this is something the size of a postage card, but somebody's introducing here as we get close to the end of the block, a 128-terabyte SD card?
Yep, they could very well be on their way. What was the company? An SD manufacturer, the SD Association, announced that the next memory card has a theoretical maximum storage capacity of 128 with a data transfer rate of a gig a second. Well, I actually take a long time to transfer everything to or from one of those things.
So something that's smaller than the little sliding window on an old-style floppy disk holding 128 terabytes.
Yeah, the new architecture allows for that possibility. It's still definitely on its way, but when the architecture allows for it, then it's going to happen sooner or later. There's an awful lot of information to have in those tiny little slips of plastic.
Yeah, which if you misplace it, you cry. I'm already paranoid about losing my 32s.
Yeah, 32 gigabyte.
Yeah, I'm already paranoid about losing those when I do a video shoot. All right, Alan, that is all the time we have for this hour. I want to thank you very much, and we will talk to you next week. You are listening to Boomer Tech Radio, back with more of the tech news you can use right after the top of the hour news.
Ever since we started Boomer Tech Radio, Advanced Automotive has been part of our program. But Tim and Cody Morlock are more than just our advertisers. They're our friends, and they are our first choice when we have our personal vehicles serviced. Why? Well, because after your home, your car is probably your second biggest investment, and it's vital that it be safe and dependable. Advanced Automotive has a skilled staff of certified technicians ready to diagnose your vehicle and get it running right. Advanced Automotive is listed on RepairPal.com, a national rating site where customers can leave reviews and even get an estimate on the cost of a repair. Go where the professionals take their vehicles to be serviced. Advanced Automotive in Reading. On the web at advancedautoreading.com. Visit them at 5756 F Westside Road, just off Bonneview. Call them at 530-244-4423. Advanced Automotive.
You're listening to KCNR 1460, community talk radio for the North State. This is KCNR, Shasta, Redding.
From SeaTac International Airport in Seattle last night was a 3.5-year Horizon employee and had clearance to be among the aircraft. The 29-year-old man did not have a pilot's license, and authorities say it's unclear just how he attained the skills he had to do the acrobatics he did in the aircraft before crashing into a small island in the Puget Sound about an hour after takeoff. Republican Representative Chris Collins says he will no longer run for re-election after being charged with insider trading.
Collins says in a statement he'll suspend his re-election campaign and finish out the rest of his term. The New York congressman was arrested on Wednesday on charges he used insider information about a biotechnology company to make illicit stock trades. He's denied any wrongdoing. Collins says he's ending his campaign in the best interest of his constituents, President Trump, and the Republican Party. Bob Agnew reporting.
The Monsanto Chemical Company says it's going to appeal a San Francisco jury's award of millions of dollars to a groundskeeper who says his cancer was caused by the use of the product Roundup.
Monsanto says hundreds of studies have found that Roundup is safe, and it will appeal the $289 million verdict awarded to Dwayne Johnson, a former groundskeeper for Bay Area schools who has terminal cancer.
Hopefully this thing will start to get the attention that it needs to get right so folks can make a good choice.
The jury was polled by the judge. Did they agree that Roundup caused his cancer? And
did Monsanto fail to adequately warn of the potential risks? Answer, yes.
Johnson says he hopes this verdict is the first of many in thousands of cases against the giant chemical company. I'm Jackie Quinn.
And you can always get more news and read more analysis at townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstra.
Pat Boone here again, and I assure you, I have never before endorsed a pain relief product. Not until now. Not until Relief Factor came along as a 100% drug-free solution for people struggling with ordinary pain. Quite simply, Relief Factor was designed by doctors to help relieve those occasional aches and pains due to aging, exercise, and everyday living. Let me ask you, are aches and pains keeping you from sleeping through the night? Or keeping you from taking those nice long walks or playing golf or tennis? You can't really call it living if you can't get around comfortably. The 3-week quick start from Relief Factor may be all you need to lower or even eliminate these pains. A whole lot of people have already gone to ReliefFactor.com, and here's something you need to know. The majority of people who order the 3-week quick start, now only $19.95, go on to order more. Let's see if we can get you out of pain too. Go to ReliefFactor.com.
Authorities continue to investigate the suspected overdose death at Trump Tower of a man romantically linked to reality TV personality Bethany Frankel.
New York City police, along with emergency medical workers, were called to Trump Tower Friday morning, where they say they found Dennis Shields unconscious in his apartment. The 51-year-old was pronounced dead at the scene. The medical examiner is still determining the exact cause of death, but an overdose is suspected. Shields was a businessman. He was also the on-again, off-again boyfriend of the Real Housewives of New York City cast member and Skinny Girl founder Bethany Frankel. She went to high school with his estranged wife. Julie Walker, New York.
On this date in 1992, the Mall of America, the nation's largest shopping entertainment center, opened in Bloomington, Minnesota. More on these stories at townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstra. An Australian tourist biking in New York City died after colliding with a garbage truck as she swerved to avoid a vehicle blocking the bike lane near Central Park.
Police say 23-year-old Madison Jane Lighton veered into traffic around 4:45 p.m. Friday when a stopped taxi suddenly pulled in front of her. Lighton was pronounced dead at a hospital. A transportation advocacy group says it was a crash waiting to happen because lazy and entitled drivers are parking, dropping people off, and idling in bike lanes. Patrick Foss reporting.
Hat in hand, ready to toss into the ring, Michael Avenatti, the self-styled provocateur, taking on the president on behalf of adult actress Stormy Daniels, says he's seriously considering running for president in 2020, He says his decision, a lot of it's going to have to hinge on what direction he thinks the Democratic Party's taking and who is likely to get into the race. News and analysis at townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstra.
It's a given that your car or light truck is going to need service sooner or later, and often waiting until later means a lot bigger repair bill. Now, there are many repair shops in town, so it pays to do your research and find out where your friends and neighbors take their vehicles and check reviews online as well. Advanced Automotive of Reading is listed on RepairPal.com, where customers just like you talk about their experience. Advanced Auto has been making quality auto care easy since 1993 and has a philosophy of keeping things simple. Stop by their shop at 5756 F West Side Road just off Bonneview. You'll see vehicles from local businesses and first responders in the yard because those customers rely on cars and trucks that are safe and reliable. But more than that, safe vehicles mean a safer community. And honestly, it's the right way to do business. Check them out for yourself. Advanced Automotive, 5756 F West Side Road in Reading, 244-4423. Welcome back to Hour 2 of Boomer Tech Radio. I'm Bob Belongi.
And I'm Brenda Belongi.
Tech news you can use. Of course, you can pick up the podcast on your favorite streaming app. You can also go to BoomerTechRadio.com or the archives here at KCNR1460.com. When we first got our Galaxy Note 8s, which are now, I guess, obsolete, but we'll hang on to them for a while.
Well, they're only obsolete because now the Galaxy Note 9 is out. They're certainly not obsolete when it comes to capability and so on and so forth.
Haven't even scratched the surface.
Oh, my gosh. I don't use it anywhere near to its capacity. I haven't had time, actually, to explore all the possibilities with it. Maybe I'll get there someday. But
one of the things, of course, that came with now I think the S7 had this as well, Bixby. And people go, what's Bixby? And that's exactly the problem. Even people who have a Samsung phone know Bixby only as the annoying app that launches when you don't really want it to. And this was... Because it's keyed to a button on the left-hand side of the phone, and you keep hitting the thing.
It's also pretty useless.
Yeah.
At least, I don't know anybody who's impressed by it.
Yeah, Bixby was an attempt by Samsung, and God bless them, for wanting to step into it. But in a market already dominated by Siri and the Google lady and Alexa, introducing yet another not terribly capable voice assistant.
Yeah.
Was really not the best market. They must have sunk a pile of money into this thing.
It's... much easier to say Google blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah.
Or actually OKG.
Yeah, okay. And you're off to the races. So, as Brenda mentioned, the Galaxy 9 is out on the market. A little bit bigger screen, a little bit more money, da-da-da-da-da. Bixby is just, it's never going to really catch on. When you compare it to Google Assistant, Alexa, or Siri, it's just lame. Now, the Note 9, of course, is quite the beast with a 4,000 milliamp battery.
Wow.
The top-tier model has a 512 gig of internal storage.
Wow.
And the S Pen has other functions, such as being used as a wireless remote. Still, they brought out Bixby 2.0. Samsung says it's going to be faster request processing. Company showed the digital assistant's ability to call an Uber or reserve a restaurant or control Spotify. But that's a game of catch-up. Google, which we are used to using, or Siri, if you are an iPhone fan, already does all that. So... I don't see. I'm a lot of people end up disabling it, and I'm willing to make a bet that in a few more years they'll just quietly let it die. Now they brought out a smart speaker,
powered by Bixby.
Ooh.
And it's a goofy looking thing. It's there's a picture of it here in Mashable. And it looks like, well, it's got three little stumpy legs, and it looks like a cauldron.
Yeah.
It does. It's got a wire sticking out of it.
Silly looking little thing.
Yeah.
Well, so, it looks like one of those hydro flask wine cups.
Yeah.
With a tripod stand.
Yeah.
But three little legs.
So I think that.
They better not.
Because, you know, and Samsung's being stubborn about this, but.
Of course.
The market is, and they wanted to be able to not pay Google.
Probably.
And they wanted to be able to go into markets where Google is in bad odor, like the EU. It's not going to work. I am predicting that this thing is going to fail within the next couple of years, and they'll just simply finally give it up as a bad job. Let's see here. Article in Wired that there's a new vulnerability that's been discovered for Android devices. Now, this is an overshoot. Remember the Meltdown bug that basically was a sort of a digital apocalypse? It infected a lot of computers. A lot more were patched fairly quickly. But it's a exploit. And there's thoughts that maybe the, I just got an advertisement popping up on my screen there. There's possibilities that a rewrite of this exploit may be able to start, tapping into these millions of, Android phones, causing problems there.
Okay. So, if you read further down in this article, however, the vulnerabilities are a combination of the Android operating system. Is this the same article? Am I looking at the same one? And the fact that the cell phone provider that you know who your provider is. So there are some things about that. But the when you get all the way to the end of the article that says be afraid, be very afraid if you have an Android device, mm-hmm. is really kind of where it is. It mainly talks about apparently the focus for the devices, or the focus on which devices have this problem, are Asus, LG, Essential, and ZTE.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not every device with an Android system. And this is, you know, they make a point in this article about the fact that part of it is that Android is an open operating system. Well, yeah, I mean, that's been known a long time. And yeah, it's been known that occasionally, because of that, maybe some apps or something aren't as vetted as other things. So I'm really not impressed by this article.
It's almost like the story was written by an Apple fan.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, because as I was reading through this, in the very beginning, I thought, oh, this person is an Apple fan, when they mentioned that whole thing about Android. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and how are you to know? I mean, there's no way for you as a consumer to know that this is a problem.
Yeah.
That just isn't going to happen. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Stay tuned.
Right.
Meanwhile, in the European Union, now, years ago, during the early days of smartphones, every stinking smartphone had its own connector. Remember that?
Uh-huh.
You would buy an adapter, and it would have like 10 different plugs on it to fit the various brands. And if you were really unfortunate, you would get a none-of-the-above solution there on your phone.
Yeah.
But Kyocera, LG, Samsung, everybody had their own particular funky little connector. Well, the European Union was, and when you bought a new phone, like if you had a Nokia and you, and then you got a newer Nokia, the connector would be different. So you wound up throwing away the Wallwart transformer charger.
Yeah, because it only fit that one
phone. Right, it would only fit that one phone. It would have a weird voltage. And all these companies wanted you to buy their stuff and only their stuff. So nothing would fit anything else. Well, the European Union back in, I think it was 2011, started really pushing to get a one connector to rule them all. And most companies fell in line by adopting the micro USB. which is the one everybody tries to put in backwards the first try.
Well, it's...
Because it's hard to tell. It's slightly wider on one side than on the other.
And I'm always looking at the slot it goes into, and it just doesn't seem... I think I have it matched up, and I don't, but, you know, it's one of those things, right? So Apple got smart. Samsung did, too, eventually, and created unique, of course, plugins that can be used either way.
Right.
Either side is right side up.
Right. Now, the Lightning connector, which is, of course, the iPhone connector, which has exposed fingers on it. Meanwhile, the other standard, which is the more modern one, and the Mac Pro uses these, is what's called USB-C. And USB-C is similar in size to a micro USB, but it's an oval rather than a sort of a subtle D shape.
Right.
And it's much faster connection. And it can carry more power because of the way that the wires are arranged inside and the number of wires that are actually carrying current. It's got a lot of small wires in it to carry a greater amount of current. So USB-C is what the European Union would like to have as the standard connector so that you only have to have... I have a bag in my man bag here that has... regular USB-B, which is the small, thick one, mini USB. I have micro USB. I have Lightning. And I have USB-C.
Oh.
So I have all these connectors, and they all are about the same size.
Right. And definitely do not work interchangeably, of course.
Right.
So back in 2009, in the European... related to the European Union, 14 manufacturers that included Samsung, Apple, Huawei, Nokia, a memorandum of understanding, noting that there needed to be some standardization, and a lot of companies have used the standardization, but the European Commission is not satisfied with how things have been going, even as recently as 2013 and 14. You know, there's still no... adaptation or adoption of these things to one thing. So the European Commissioner for Competition said, I like this, given the unsatisfactory progress that this voluntary approach, the Commission will shortly launch an impact assessment study to evaluate costs and benefits of different other options. With an eye, in a quote, with an eye of moving towards a forced standardization.
I dislike it when government steps in to innovation and forces its will. However, on the other hand, I think that Apple's already poised to drop the Lightning connector in favor of USB-C. They already have USB-C on their on the MacBook.
Right.
And it would not be a huge stretch for them to simply incorporate USB-C into the next generation iPhone. And they only do it because it's an iPhone thing. But to me, the USB-C connector is actually a little more durable and less prone to... If you look at the Apple connector, the Lightning connector, those fingers are just right out there getting rubbed on.
Yep.
And when the gold comes off, which makes them more conductive, now it's a piece of... In fact, the aftermarket charging cable... Well, no, in fact, it's the stock charging cable into my iPad. I have to wiggle it a little bit now because that coating is wearing off the fingers.
Right, yep. I noticed that about that. And really, it more or less looks like a USB-C in reverse in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
You know, they're very similar size and that sort of thing.
So
and, you know, big arguments about, of course, about having your own connector is because then you don't have to license somebody else's.
Yeah.
But
they already licensed the USB-C, and they're just, it's an identity thing.
And if you're thinking, what's the big deal? Well, imagine this. There are standards for your wall outlets in your house.
Right, right.
And you can go to any store and buy an electrical cord, like an extension cord or something like that, and it's going to fit in that thing. Any electrical device you buy will fit in that outlet.
All light bulbs have, well, up until just recently when we started seeing, but just about any light bulb in your house has a standard base. It's called the Edison base,
right?
Because it was Thomas Edison's company that came up with it.
Well, even some of the modern LED type things have been adapted with that. So, so back to the outlet. If what you bought didn't fit in that outlet, it would be crazy.
Yeah.
Now I'm not talking about the pigtail on your clothes dryer, because that's not your average wall outlet.
Yeah.
And that's a different deal. I'm not talking about those, but you can go anywhere in the United States and you can plug in an electrical device to a standardized outlet. So that's the same kind of thing with this. Is that it makes sense to standardize that over a large geographic area.
Yeah, imagine if every region in the U.S. had a slightly different wall outlet.
Right.
And you had to go, every time you went to Home Depot, you had to make sure you picked out the right heater or air conditioner or fan or whatever that had the particular plug-in. Or you had a whole adapter kit, which would be kind of dangerous with the voltages you're dealing for. So, yeah, I think that my prediction is going to be that in about 3 years, Apple's going to drop the Lightning connector in favor of USB-C and announce it proudly. And they'll be able to sell a whole new raft of peripherals.
Yes, exactly.
To go along with your shiny new iPhone XXX or whatever they're going to call, you know, the iPhone 15 or whatever. You know.
XXX. Oh, my.
Yeah. Speaking of standards, we have been living with two different smart speakers, and actually three now. We have two Echoes, one of which is our Echo Cube, which is interesting. I'm still verbally sparring with my Fire Cube because it'll turn on the TV, it'll do all the basics, but unless you give your commands in a specific format, it's not very smart.
Right.
And that's the deal, that thing with smart speakers. Turning on the bedroom light, you have to kind of be very specific. Although the Google Home is more forgiving of your formatting.
Yeah, it seems to
be. Than the Alexa is.
And it's interesting, too, though, that I notice both of them have delays. Depending on how busy, you know, perhaps your home network is, or you know whatever it is that it's doing, connecting to whatever it's connecting to, we are Borg, you know.
Mm-hmm.
and the Google Home to me seems a little more responsive. Although I do get a big kick out of the fact that you tell the Google Home to turn the light on.
It has to think about it for a while.
Well, sometimes it thinks about it. That's that delay I'm talking about. It depends on the time of day. In the morning, it's pretty quick. In the evening, not so much.
Yeah.
But it does it, and then it tells you it's going to do it.
Yeah.
There's this
some
interesting delay.
Later, yeah.
Yes, exactly. There's this delay in the coding. I find that somewhat amusing.
So according to Business Insider, Amazon is saying that the Alexa voice assistant will be able to memorize a question it couldn't answer. Sorry, I don't know that. But then come back to you later, who knows how much later, come back once it's fetched an adequate response.
The reason I'm laughing, I just had this vision of, you know, it's like, oh, I have an answer to that question. Just pops off somewhere in the middle of dinner, you know, when you're
42.
Yes. Exactly.
A month later, what?
You know, there's an answer there somewhere.
Well, it's sort of like when you're trying to memorize, when you're trying to answer a question about a movie or something, and you give up, and then hours later, the answer flies out of your mouth.
Well, yeah.
Completely out of context.
Right, but exactly, you know, you blurt out something. It's
such and such.
Yeah, what? Yeah, exactly. I just think that's funny. I mean, that's the human trait, right?
Yeah. The article in Business Insider says, this could ensure Amazon maintains its dominance over Google Home.
No.
Because I think that more and more people are going, God, she can be just a real dolt sometimes. Now, it's sheer market momentum that is keeping the Echo smart speaker at the top of the heap.
It could be, yeah.
But Google, I think, my personal feeling is Google's making a better product right now.
We've always had a pretty good sense. We found that if we kind of like something, there's That's probably more of a majority rule than you think. Hmm. What are you doing yawning?
Yeah. The writer was asked by his Echo whether he wanted to activate answer updates. When he asked what it was, the system replied, "If you ask me a question and I don't know the answer, but I find out later, I'll notify you." Amazon has confirmed that answer updates is being rolled out over coming days. It adds a layer of sophistication, which often replies to queries with something like, "Sorry, I don't understand the question." Now, something that we could do with our Google Home that the Echo can't do is a complicated command like, "Wake me up Monday through Thursday at 5 a.m. Now, if you think about the number of steps that
it has to parse out to make that happen.
And if you were trying to program that manually into an alarm clock, it would drive you nuts.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
But you
it
can
really
do,
is.
But you can do that all in one sentence.
Right, yeah. And you can word it different ways, and it comes to the same conclusion as well. It's quite astonishing.
In fact, the idea that Google Home can understand you better may be more attractive in some customers' eyes. That could explain why Google Home is chewing into Echo's dominance in the smart speaker market. eMarketer found that 66% of U.S. smart speaker users used an Echo at least once a month, compared to about 30% who used a Google Home. But the ratio is swinging. It's predicted that Google Home will have about 33% of the market, and Amazon will drop to 60%. And somewhere in the back of the pack is the iHome or whatever. What is the Apple Pod or
whatever it is.
The overpriced thing.
That doesn't work so well.
That doesn't work very well. Yeah. HomePod. Yeah.
It's so memorable, you can't remember what its name
is. Yeah, well, it's so far off the radar. So, yeah, and that's got to be another thing that's just chapping away. Siri, of course, kind of really got this ball rolling, but the Amazon Echo smart speaker is doing it right. So here's the thing, you know. One thing we discovered during this last week, and this is a trait of smartphones, well, of any cell phone, the further away you are from the tower, the harder the phone has to work to maintain a connection.
Right.
And if it can't find a tower, it pushes itself really hard.
Right. To search.
Putting out high-powered pulses.
That too.
To look for a tower, waiting for a tower to respond.
Yep.
Well, we, as we have noted previously, and we really discovered this last week when we were under evacuation, we were in an area where there was almost no phone service.
Right.
And the phones would go dead in about half a day because it was pushing out so much power trying to connect. So your solution there is to, you know, either go into airplane mode, then remember to turn airplane mode off so you weren't eating the battery, or recharge time to time. And portable battery packs are actually coming down in price quite a bit. The highest rated portable battery packs that are costing less than $20, the Anker PowerCore 5000, the Lumina Ultra Compact Portable Charger, the AIBOCN, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, 1600 milliamp power bank, that's not bad. They also make a 20,000 milliamp hour power bank, or the Florian solar charger. And the solar charger is kind of neat if you go camping and stuff like that. You can actually take it out when you're off grid. So that's something you may want to have in your bag for your next natural disaster, you know, when it comes along.
Yep.
The solar charger from Florian has a 10,000 milliamp capacity. Your phone will charge up at least twice from it, and then you can either recharge it via micro USB, or you can set it out in the sun for a day, and it will recharge the bank or will recharge your phone. Now,
well, that's kind of handy.
I found a folding solar panel that's a 60-watt folding panel that it's kind of neat because it actually was able to recharge my phone in about 3 hours.
It's pretty good size, though.
Yeah, it's a fair size thing.
It rolls up to a nice ball, but it's not small, small.
One more segment of Boomer Tech Radio is coming right after these messages. It might be the car or light truck that gets you to your job every day. Maybe your child drives it to school. Or perhaps your drivers deliver goods to the customers who keep your business going. The bottom line is, you rely heavily on that vehicle to be safe and reliable day after day, and that means regular maintenance by professionals trained in the latest automotive repair techniques. For Brenda and myself, that means Advanced Automotive is the only repair shop we trust with our personal vehicles. Advanced Automotive does everything they can to make car care easy. Founded in 1993 by Tim Morlock and now owned by his son Cody, carrying on a tradition of honest work at a fair price. Find out for yourself by visiting AdvancedAutoReading.com or go to RepairPal.com, or you could just call 530-244-4423. It's a great little repair shop that's a bit hard to find, but worth the effort, at 5756 F West Side Road in Reading. Advanced Automotive. Purpose-driven banking. That's the vision behind the founding of Five Star Bank in 1999. Services inspired by partnership and defined by shared vision and goals. Five Star Bank, a champion of local economic development and community stewardship. Your success is their success. Now that's smart people doing good business. In a world that's both more connected and more isolated by high tech, Five Star Bank brings you a personal touch to small business banking, cash management, and online services. Five Star Bank, consistently rated among the very best by industry associations, rating agencies, and of course, customers and partners just like you. Your partner in success is Five Star Bank. FiveStarBank.com. Visit your local branch at 358 Hartnell in Reading. Progressive, professional, personal. That's Five Star Bank. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
No one plans to visit the emergency room, but when life's accidents happen, you need to get treated, not seated. Shasta Regional Medical Center is located at 1100 Butte Street in downtown Reading. They have emergency room doctors and staff that guarantee you will be seen by a medical professional within 30 minutes of your arrival. Shasta Regional Medical Center believes in delivering patient-centered health care with compassion and respect for every patient and their family.
Hi, I'm Sharon Clark of Home Helpers. It's amazing to look back at all the families we've touched since 2004, but our clients say it best.
I want to express my deep appreciation for the love and support you and your...
So fortunate to have an organization like Home Helpers.
You never know how much your contribution meant or how greatly you touched our lives.
Thank you so much for helping me care for my husband.
After hearing what it's meant to them, I truly can't imagine doing anything else. When you need help for your loved one, choose Home Helpers. There is no place like home.
I am Jim from Design Time. Oh, another doggy accent on your carpet. Ah, that's the worst. You can clean it up and hope it won't smell, or you can have the new LifeGuard waterproof backing from Shaw Floors. This patented LifeGuard system protects against odors and stains. If you have pets and kids, you can be confident that your home will stay clean and fresh with LifeGuard carpets from Shaw. Featured at Design Time. Stop by and see us. We're located on Highway 273 just north of Wind River Casino. See you there.
A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
Ever since we started Boomer Tech Radio, Advanced Automotive has been part of our program. But Tim and Cody Morlock are more than just our advertisers. They're our friends, and they are our first choice when we have our personal vehicles serviced. Why? Well, because after your home, your car is probably your second biggest investment, and it's vital that it be safe and dependable. Advanced Automotive has a skilled staff of certified technicians ready to diagnose your vehicle and get it running right. Advanced Automotive is listed on RepairPal.com, a national rating site where customers can leave reviews
and even get an estimate on the cost of a repair. Go where the professionals take their vehicles to be serviced. Advanced Automotive in Reading. On the web at advancedautoreading.com. Visit them at 5756 F Westside Road, just off Bonneview. Call them at 530-244-4423. Advanced Automotive. And we're back for one more segment of Boomer Tech Radio. By the way, the theme music, that catchy little video game tune, is called 8-Bit Junkie, comes to us from George Wood. He's a composer over in merry old England. And the music being used by permission. Well, boom and bust. Bitcoin was going to be the next big thing. It was going to make a lot of... It is making a lot of people a lot of money. Evangelists say it's the logical successor to traditional currency. Long overdue replacement to paper cash. Detractors point out inherent volatility and potential for abuse by bad actors, terrorists, and international drug cartels.
Then
governments really dislike it because they can't control it.
Wasn't the U.S. printed $20 bill accused of the same thing?
Yeah, well,
at one time?
Well, because...
Terrorists, drug dealers, yeah, and other nefarious activities?
Well, that's why, yeah, the really large bills were taken out of circulation.
Right. And this is one of the reasons, counterfeit activities, actually, are one of the reasons some businesses won't even take $100 bills and such like anymore, which I don't understand, because those have so many ribbons and doodahs in them that it should be really tough to counterfeit those. But, hey, whatever. I thought that it was Bitcoin was making a few people very rich.
Yeah,
not so many, which is a lot of people very rich.
Relatively few, actually, and these companies that have taken over whole towns to put up their mining operations,
right,
with the computers,
right,
sucking up all the electricity. I'm talking about a global warming situation.
Well, I'm not sure they're sucking up all the electricity, but they moved into areas where the electricity is cheap to do this, yes. And that could be solved. That could be, you only get to use X amount, and... beyond that, then, but that's crazy stuff. Yeah. It's just all kinds of crazy stuff. But anyway.
UBS is a Swiss multinational. I think it was originally United Bank of Scotland, but now it's, of course, a multinational bank. Suggests that Bitcoin in its current form, too unstable and limited to be a viable means of payment for global transactions. For one of the reasons is that to complete a Bitcoin transaction can take several minutes. Visa and MasterCard can do payment processes that handle more than 5,000 transactions a second. Bitcoin will take several minutes to do a single one. Ethereum speeds along at 15 seconds a transaction, but that's still a fraction of what you can do with a Visa or a MasterCard. So if it was to become more than just a niche thing, or a speculator's dream, they would have to improve the infrastructure. And the whole idea of Bitcoin is that the infrastructure is spread out over hundreds and hundreds of computers, which is how the mining works. But also the basic value. And the article also points out speculative demand accounted for more than 70% of all the pricing changes. So it's like that Dutch flower. It's like the Dutch flower thing.
Oh, yeah. That's
where
right.
Where it was speculation.
Tulips, yeah,
the Dutch tulip craze.
Yes, yes. Tulip bulbs became very valuable.
Well, it looks like, you know, Bitcoin peaked about 6-8 months ago when it broke through 20,000 and has since fallen back. Nobody wants to be dealing with it's like a stock that fluctuates wildly. The investors get a little bit spooky, and then everybody pulls out and the thing caves in. And the initial interest in people were using Bitcoin to buy coffee and things like that because it was not, hey, I'm using Bitcoin, and the transaction takes forever to go through. Is Bitcoin dead?
Probably not.
Probably some variation. And, of course, the blockchain technology is being used for
other things.
Yeah, like making sure that for tracking assets,
because it is a durable transaction that is verified at every step along the way, which is the key for it being a currency. Is it going to, it's sort of like internet gold, you know, or some other type of speculative option that will bounce up and down. But for becoming a day-to-day digital currency, I don't see it happening.
Well, the fact that it's done what it's done in my mind is pretty amazing, you know, how all gone. And it it kind of signals to me that there would be some need or desire or something on that level to have some sort of international ubiquitous currency. They talk about that in Star Trek, you know, where everybody has credits or whatever the deal is, and it seems to be international. What was it? The Ferengi had...
gold-pressed latinum.
Yeah.
It was something you couldn't duplicate.
Yeah, something you couldn't duplicate. I believe those were actual pieces, actual coins, but at the same time it was an interchangeable or interspecies accepted...
means of currency.
Of currency, yes. So who knows how that's all going to go.
U.S. military personnel on active duty have been banned from using devices and applications utilizing GPS.
It makes sense.
GPS, of course, was started by the military. It's found now in just about everything from watches to map software. The technology is used to do things, tell you where you are, where you need to go, but to monitor exercise and performance levels, dietary apps. The DOD, Department of Defense, says the technology could be used to present enemies with information on military operations. It was revealed recently in a map that was displayed showing it was basically what they called a heat map of all the users. And there's this big cluster in the Middle East where soldiers were wearing the fitness trackers to maintain, you know, to track their fitness levels. Well, that information was sent off to the mothership and then made public.
Yeah. You would think in some ways that the military would leap all over this idea and issue ones that are specific to their system.
Right.
And provide the soldiers with the means to do what it is that they want, but that the military controls the data or the throughput of the data, if you will.
Yeah.
And makes it secure. So, I don't know. Very interesting.
Aside from the fact that, because if you've got a cell phone that isn't, you know, locked down in such a way that it isn't sending information out willy-nilly, which possibly an enemy could take advantage of.
Right, exactly.
It's a serious problem.
It could also be used tactically.
Yep.
Strategically and tactically to send misinformation.
Exactly. Yeah. There you go.
So, you know, we got to think about this on the other side.
Now, I don't know if you have the same page up that I do, but on the sidebar, the top item under related stories, do you have one that, are you seeing the story that I'm seeing that might be very interesting about drones?
No.
Okay, I'm going to pull it up on my screen. That's the thing. We have two different versions of the Flipboard app.
Because we're on two different devices.
Yeah, we're on two different platforms.
Yeah, two different platforms.
So, the title of the article, Flying Drone, flying drones near wildfires could kill people, don't do it. The bottom line is simple, flying a drone near a wildfire could cause catastrophic damage. The smoke is covering three-quarters of the state, property lives are at stake, drone pilots are getting in the way. And we first saw this, what, about 2 years ago, a big fire down in Cajon Canyon. They had to shut down the aviation because of the drone pilots. And I know there's people, well, just shoot them out of the air. That's easier said than done.
Right, not to mention the fact they're illegal and a few other things. So one of the things that about the fires that are here and the large fires here in Northern California, particularly the car fire that hasn't had much drone footage other than from licensed, authorized drone operators, is because you can't get to the fire.
Yeah.
And the drones don't have enough range for people to be further away and then go cause problems. But you don't have to have a drone. Many moons ago, I was on associated with a fire in Utah that that had a small plane flying around, and they had to shut the entire air show down because of this small plane was in the way of things. It turns out that it was a state representative that wanted to check and make sure that his house in the area was still safe. And, of course, their frequencies are in there. Oh, yeah, that caused a huge flap. Till the aircraft went away, they really couldn't do much. And, you know, when you can't communicate it with that. And drones are very similar. That isn't to say that there aren't drones being used on these fires.
Right. In
but there
fact,
are
yeah.
big military ones that stay up for hours yeah. and hours and hours at a time, and they fly around 24,000 feet and provide a lot of intel.
Now, especially licensed drones are being used to show the damage from the car fire yeah. here in Northern California. Very spectacular
damage,
mind-numbing footage.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. Yeah. You can Google that if you're from out of the area and take a look at it. It's quite impressive.
Mm-hmm. The article does explain, and this is pretty good for a civilian written an article. It's on ZDNet. Now, Brenda and I, of course, know this because we have some pretty close ties to the industry. Firefighting, especially with huge wildfires, and this is obviously written for the urban people who don't understand.
Or don't have no, or people, folks that don't have
no
any
frame
exposure.
Of reference
yeah.
for wildland fires.
No exposure to the industry.
What we used to popularly call forest fires is now referred to as wildland fire because it's not necessarily just the forest of
right.
pine trees that burns.
Right.
A lot of what burned around us was scrub brush and manzanita.
There's
yeah.
grass fires that are in the wildlands.
Yeah. They call them vegetation fires or wildland fires.
Wildland as opposed to urban land.
Yeah. A lot of this stuff is only accessible from the air because the terrain is so bad. You couldn't get a road in there if you had to.
Well, it's very steep, and it's and in a lot of these areas, the resource that's being consumed is really not worth much. In some cases, you've got big brush fields and things like that out there. It doesn't have any commercial logging value or something like that anyway. And that isn't to say that if there's homes and things like that in there, that those are not valuable. That's not what I'm talking about.
The FAA, of course, does issue temporary flight restrictions for drone operators. Trouble is, in a fast-moving event, the restriction doesn't necessarily get out for a couple of days. And if you interfere, I'm saying this to people who may be drone operators, and that, well, there's no restriction, so I can go take pictures, I can get my name on YouTube. If you are found to be interfering with firefighting operations, you can be fined $20,000 per occurrence.
That's a pretty pricey drone.
Yeah, that's a pricey drone shot for a little bit of YouTube fame. And God forbid.
You'll be remembered on YouTube, but not for what you think.
And God forbid that the drone causes an accident.
Right. That's one of the risks. And I just don't understand why people just don't stay away. It's just like folks that'll drive out into a fire area and get in the way of the suppression resources. Just stay out of the way. You don't need to be there. You're not helping.
Yeah. Well, I used to tell people when I was a reporter, you know, this is not a spectator sport.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly right. It isn't.
Don't go chasing the fire trucks. It's a bad idea. Bad idea. Let's see here.
Apple says.
Yeah, Apple is encouraging, they have been before Congress because of privacy concerns, because there have been stories and some concerns raised about their microphones are on all the time so that Siri can do her job.
Yeah, well.
And that everything you say
or whatever
is being sent to the mothership.
Really, people? I'm sorry. I have a big problem with that whole idea and people buying off on it because think about this. How many iPhones are there out there? And it's on 24/7 and it's collecting all this data, and a lot of the time, at least part of the day, one's going to assume that there is absolutely nothing but background noise in a room for it to record. Or a fan on or something like that. The refrigerator is running. Big deal. Where do you store all of that data?
Yeah.
And not only that, you could have algorithms that sort through that and automatically identify phraseology or something like that. But why on earth would anybody be interested in the volume of data when you have all this data? You know, how much, what percentage, well over 99% of the data would be absolutely useless.
Yeah.
And not, so this does not even make tangible sense.
Yeah, in response to a series of inquiries sent by four lawmakers. Okay, with all the problems that's going on, this is what lawmakers are focusing on, you know?
Jeez.
Tim Cook wrote back that it does not record audio while listening for Siri wake-up commands. There's a little computer program that looks for Hey Siri or Siri, which is why they picked a weird name.
Right.
So it was a unique sounding
exactly
audio. Users are always asked to approve microphone access. That's why if you get a random app and it asks to access your microphone, see,
it's like,
especially
no.
If it's a free app,
it's like, no,
there's no.
no
legitimate reason for you to check.
There's a whole bunch of stuff those apps want access to your contacts list and all that. It's like, excuse me, what do you need that for? No.
Yeah. The news comes a month after Samsung mobile phone owners were up in arms over their own user privacy. Claims were made, never verified, that several of the smartphone models were randomly sending photos to a cell phone's contacts. Now, this is very similar to the few minutes of audio that was sent at random to a contact.
Yeah, from a Amazon Echo.
Right. And,
I think it was an Amazon Echo.
Yeah, it was the investigation, and the researchers were not able to duplicate this.
Right.
The investigation is that it just so happened that a certain combination of words, and if you think about the number of units that are in use in the number of houses worldwide, it's like the million monkeys. Or the infinite number of monkeys, that if you have an infinite number of monkeys in a room with an infinite number of typewriters, one of them will turn out Shakespeare.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're really worried about it, you know, give up the phone or something. Put the tape over your camera, you know, do all those things.
And along the same line, you know, we have to have our slice of apple every week. Facebook is still a juggernaut in the business, but is this saying it's losing market share? What's this article say?
Facebook is losing traffic numbers, and a lot of people who, of course, Facebook is no longer cool if you're under 25.
Right.
It's old. Facebook traffic has fallen by about half since 2016. This leaves opening to YouTube. The study's data shows that Facebook is about to become the second largest traffic site in the U.S. Google would now have two of the top traffic. You know, Google is, of course, the top traffic spot. Is everybody who uses Chrome? Most people have Android smartphones, mm-hmm. use Google.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Bixby. this would make Facebook the number three traffic. See, Zuckerberg had this fantasy. Remember this a couple of years ago?
Yeah, the one source to rule them all.
He wanted to be your news. He wanted to be your social contacts. He wanted to be your messenger. Now, we have used Facebook Messenger in recent weeks. And that's what Zuckerberg wanted. And of course, free isn't free. You're giving up something. What are they reading out of all those messages that are flooding back and forth on Facebook Messenger? And you're seeing a lot of advertising crap on your Facebook Messenger, but what are they harvesting out of that besides? Facebook, I think, is going to be in trouble. I don't think they're going to die in 5 years, but
I think
they're look how fast MySpace imploded and died.
You know, the ubiquity of social media, it's definitely here to stay in some form or another, but these things are evolving, you know, fairly rapidly, and we'll see what happens. What's interesting to me is that for a long time, a technology came along, television is a good example, and it just, you know, for decades,
mm-hmm.
it was pretty much the same. Well, there were some improvements, minor improvements, but now, you look every 5 years, is practically need a new television because of the content, the television itself, the ability to display these things, and the content gets better, then you need a new TV.
Yep.
And it's just like that with PCs to some extent, phones to some extent. Social media is no different in this case, where there's some kind of acceleration of working of these things so that you can hardly keep up with it anymore.
Yeah.
And it crossed 10 years or even two decades. You look at where it used to be at the beginning of those two decades and where it is now, and you go, wow, things are way different. Whereas
it's entirely possible that, according to the article here, hit peak social. People are going, I'm giving up way too much of my life. I'm spending way too much of my life on this stupid thing. I need to step outside and go meet some people.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see if a younger generation or the next generation decides that talking to people in person is like the hip thing to do because it's not what our parents did, right?
Yeah.
That's going to be pretty interesting. And I'll laugh if that's the way it is. Gosh, yeah. Grandparents all of a sudden became cool because you can talk to them.
Yeah. Now, Twitter, of course, going through a lot of changes. Snapchat going through a lot of pages. Instagram.
They're all of the same ilk. It's all social media.
But overall, I think the traffic, I don't think there's going to be a next big social thing because people are now gun shy about
Well, that's it. They're giving up a lot of information, making things public, and then they're out there forever. You know, you can't retract any of this stuff. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens in the next iteration, what the next thing will be.
The next big thing. A couple of more things. A couple of notes about, this is interesting. There's a radio show that we don't have on this station, but a lot of people subscribe to by a gentleman named Alex Jones. It's called InfoWars. Now, I'm going to say this up front. Alex Jones is a nut. Okay, he pushes all kinds of conspiracy theories and he talks about, he's just a, and I'm sorry for Alex Jones supporters, but the guy is a nut. But
I don't think I even know who he is, so.
When these companies say, we don't like what Alex Jones says, so we're going to silence him. That's
not good.
Makes my hackles go up.
Yeah. I mean,
when we silence the voice we don't agree with, that's dangerous, folks. That's really dangerous. Do I agree with what the man says? Oh, hell no. Not a lot of it.
But he has the right.
He has the right to
express an opinion or an idea or that sort of thing.
So when a few companies become the gatekeepers of everything, and this is the same thing with Zuckerberg, shutting down the InfoWars stuff. They're shutting down points of view that don't dovetail with it. Is some of this stuff disgusting? Oh, hell yeah.
But you have control of your own ears.
Yeah, exactly. I have had people who say, well, I don't like it that you did such and such. Well, okay, turn it off. So that's
pretty much.
Yeah, but if you do like this show, of course, subscribe to the podcast. Go to boomertechradio.com.
Send us some love.
Send us some love. We enjoy it. That's all the time we have. It's Bob and Brenda saying, wherever you go, whatever you do, be safe and be good to each other. It's a given that your car or light truck is going to need service sooner or later, and often, waiting until later means a lot bigger repair bill. Now, there are many repair shops in town, so it pays to do your research and find out where your friends and neighbors take their vehicles and check reviews online as well. Advanced Automotive of Reading is listed on RepairPal.com, where customers just like you talk about their experience. Advanced Auto has been making quality auto care easy since 1993 and has a philosophy of keeping things simple.
Stop by their shop at 5756 F West Side Road, just off Bonnie View. You'll see vehicles from local businesses and first responders in the yard because those customers rely on cars and trucks that are safe and reliable. But more than that, safe vehicles mean a safer community. And honestly, it's the right way to do business. Check them out for yourself. Advanced Automotive, 5756 F West Side Road in Reading, 244-4423.
You're listening to KCNR 1460, Community Talk Radio for the North State. This is KCNR, Shasta, Reading.